If falafel isn't your thing, maybe a good grilled cheese sandwich is more to your liking. That's what we were banking on last Friday when we invited you out to our first ever Hear Hear Story Slamwich. That's right, a grilled cheese cook-off and storytelling competition. All part of our new initiative, Hear Hear, a pop-up radio project. Our chefs ranged from the formidable...
Because I've been in the National Grilled Cheese Competition the past 4 years, and I have 7 trophies now.
To the, well, inventive.
My great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother invented the grilled cheese sandwich, actually.
To the colorful.
Well, Dr. Rainbow is the name I acquired at Burning Man, so I'm bringing the kind of the survivor-esque skill set that, you know, I can make a grilled cheese anywhere out of anything, you know, with dust storms in my faces and... You know, really hungover.
Those were the voices of Charles Hodgkins, Michael Davidson, and Dylan Bartley, otherwise known as the Burrito Eater, the Grilled Cheese Guy, and Dr. Rainbow. So, who won the grilled cheese cook-off? Well, he said he could make a grilled cheese anywhere.
I'm overwhelmed. I'm verklempt. I was the underdog. Everybody loves an underdog, especially the underdog who wins.
Congratulations to Dr. Rainbow, a.k.a. Dylan Bartley, for his grilled cheese victory. We also invited local storytellers to take a stab at our theme of the evening, food. We heard tales ranging from Jewish deli cravings to vegetarian-turned-meat eaters to family transformations at the dinner table. But in the end...
I would like to proclaim tonight's story slamwich champion, Max McClure.
Our winning story was from a science writer sharing his thoughts on an old enemy, the squid. And here's our story slam champion himself, Stanford University science writer Max McClure.
In 2009, reports started coming in from San Diego to the effect that squid were, quote-unquote, attacking divers. These were Humboldt or jumbo squid, Desiticus gigas, man-sized, 100-pound six-footers, thousands of them, and they had barbed, tooth-like projections ringing every sucker and an apparent grabby interest in the gleaming lights and computers and so on that divers like to tote around. It behooves me to point out that there are no recorded deaths due to Humboldt squid attacks, and the only injuries I've heard of have been to fishermen and meddling biologists. Still, there is something disconcerting about their arrival. The squid are native to the Chilean and Peruvian coast, but they've been moving north for decades. They became California regulars in the 90s, and they've recently been spotted as far north as Alaska. We don't know why. It could be seawater oxygen levels, it could be temperature or overfishing of other species. We do know, however, that they're learning to eat new things. Farther south, Desiticus sticks mainly to minuscule lanternfish, while the ones that spend their time up here have developed a taste for bigger game, salmon, Pacific hake. This is a terrible miscalculation. Those are our fish. In fact, they make up some of the West Coast's largest fisheries. The squid, in essence, have attacked our women and eaten our bread. So what's to be done? According to Chris Cosentino, head chef of San Francisco's Encanto, we eat them. This is courtesy of a Men's Journal article titled Save the Ocean, Eat a Squid, which approximates a lot of the rhetoric surrounding the issue. Eating to defend the homeland. There's nothing wrong with eating squid, but as a military strategy, the idea doesn't make much sense. New invertebrate dishes aren't in the American dietary playbook, especially when the squid flesh in question is most often described as vulcanized. When it comes to changing palates, it seems likely that the squid will outpace us. And it's doubtful that there's an ecological need for a domestic Desiticus market in the first place. But these caveats don't matter. The push for Americans to consume the invading force remains because there is a long human history of wanting to personally eat the things that threaten us. What better way to reassert our apex role than by mystically devouring the pretenders? That's why we have rattlesnake roundups and feral pig hunts. The Maori of New Zealand had a whole genre of songs that expressed the desire to eat one's rival. The people of Tenochtitlan would stand atop their pyramids and rip out the still beating hearts of fallen enemy soldiers, saving the victims' limbs for stewing later. For my money, these are effective displays of dominance. It's worth pointing out here, as an aside, that I know much of what I know about squid because I used to work in the lab of William Gilley, who studies Desiticus and has his own recipes. But I spent my time measuring the electrical impulses of squid neurons. According to tradition, this meant taking the neurons out of their heads first, which you do by decapitating the animal, cutting a slit up the mantle, stripping away a host of paraphernalia, and lifting the relevant pre-nerves to cut the stellate ganglion free of the muscle. If you try a similar procedure in a mouse, and I have, in sort of a general brain removal way, you'll need your protocol approved by a review board. Not so with the squid. Never mind that octopuses modify their environments in a way that looks a lot like tool use, or that cuttlefish communicate with such a complex set of skin patterns that it's been described as a kind of language. While there are laboratory regulations in place for the lowest of vertebrates, there are no federal guidelines for the treatment of cephalopods. There's nothing stopping me from slapping the stuffing out of an octopus, even as it attempts to construct, say, a rudimentary plow. This is just to say that the Humboldt squid is a member of the other, beyond the reach of conventional morality, and that this invites our feelings of aggression. They represent the intellectual acme of an alternate evolutionary strategy. They are bizarro primates. At nearly every single adaptive decision point, they came up with a different solution than we did. They have no backbones. Their eyes are structurally the opposite of ours. They have blue, copper-containing blood. Their worldview doesn't even derive from the same neurobiological hardware we use. Their nerves look different, larger, because cephalopods never developed myelin, which makes our nerves so conductive. Their nervous systems are highly decentralized. I've seen buckets full of ostensibly de-brained octopus, heads floppy and hollow, still capable of grabbing onto your hand and pulling. The cephalopod represents the most profoundly alien intelligence that any of us are likely to encounter. Best to fry them all before they figure out the myelin thing. I bought my own personal Thucydicus totem at Manila Oriental Market in the Excelsior. It was off-season and the animal was very small, a mantle length of about a foot. It was markedly non-threatening, curled like offal on a bed of ice. Few animals lose so much in death. There's little in common between the live squid I've seen in videos darting through the mid-ocean with dire, balletic precision, and the late cephalopod, bereft of its seawater support, flabbily splayed out for dissection. And the incantation is like dissection. It starts with you chopping off the ring of arms and tentacles just below the head. Push on the ring's center, and you'll pop the beak right out of the flesh. Drag a knife across the tentacles, and you'll dislodge the hooks. Pull on the head, and it too will readily slide from within the squid mantle, taking the organs with it. It's a convenient packaging job, a simple sleeve of muscle with quick-release innards, an organism designed by Swedes. Peeling away Decidicus's skin with a table knife will be the most time-consuming step by far. Like the cuttlefish, this animal communicates through color changes. You are thus detonguing it, leaving only the silent white latex of victory. Chop into hoops and individual tentacles and fry with breadcrumbs, cumin, red pepper, salt, whatever you have lying around. Serve with pasta and fresh tomatoes. It should taste fine, even without tenderizing. Throw its diminished body down the steps of your pyramid.